Welcome to the Round Table Podcast, Episode 4. Hello, everyone. I'm Dave Robison.
And I'm Brian Humphrey.
And you're listening to the Round Table Podcast.
Each week, we invite writers to come on the show and pitch their story ideas to Dave and I and our esteemed guest host.
And then we talk about it, we discuss it, we dig in, we explore, talk about character and plot and theme, always striving for that eternal goal of literary gold in some form or another. And we've got a pretty good track record for that, Brian.
Absolutely. It's all about the alchemy here.
Yes. We are podcasting alchemists.
Yes.
So what's going on in your life, Bri?
Oh, man. Well, I just survived parent-teacher conferences,
which was a lot of fun.
Yeah? And it seems almost every year I'm getting less and less parents coming in.
Really?
And this year I think I topped out at about 10 sets of parents, and out of 120 students... it's less than 10%. But the other interesting thing about it is that the parents that come in are always the parents that I don't need to see. You know, it's parents of students that have A's or B's and are doing great in the class. And the parents that I really need to see are somehow absent. But one thing that I did want to mention is Allie and I went and saw Woman in Black.
Oh, and?
With Daniel Radcliffe. And yeah. We loved it. I missed the first 5 minutes because I was...
getting popcorn?
No, I was trying to figure out whether or not to yell at the kids in front of us.
Oh.
And it was one of those things that I know that if I don't do it soon, that, you know, Allie's going to jump in. And I want to be the hero in the knight in shining armor and say things first. But, we had kind of passively made a few comments, and then finally I shushed them, and then they kind of mocked me. And so then Allie jumped in because she was like Mother Bear, you know, and yelled at them. But the interesting thing about watching it was I learned something about my own students, or at least that age group. And that's that any time that there was something scary that took place, or somebody jumped out, or there was a loud noise, they were rapt with attention. But as soon as people started talking and stories started coming out, the cell phones came out and they started texting people.
Holy crap.
They had no concentration. They had no sense of sitting in and listening and finding out all the details. And then what was really telling to me was that later I'm mentioning this to my classes, and one of my kids was like, well, I don't understand why he even took the job.
Who, Daniel Radcliffe?
Well, the character in the story.
Oh, you know? Okay.
And my first thought was, well, it's because... And then I started to explain it to her, and then I thought, wait a minute, no, you were texting during the part when they're explaining all of that stuff. And so it's, you know, it makes me wonder, in writing, how do we keep the attention of kids that age, you know?
Yeah.
And how are we going to reveal story in a way that they're not immediately going to skip or lose interest in the book? And there are so many kids that aren't reading that really need to be reading to cull that skill. But anyway, so that was my weekend.
And that is an excellent segue to introducing our esteemed guest host, who is renowned young adult and children's author, Gail Carson Levine. Gail, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Roundtable Podcast.
Hi, it's great to be talking to you.
Oh, we're glad to have you. Glad to have you. Folks, for those of you who are not familiar with Gail's work, you should be. She's probably best known for penning the book upon which the Ella Enchanted movie was based. She's written several novels, several series, books for Disney, a book on writing, has enjoyed time on the New York Times and LA Times bestseller list, a recognized author. Gail, tell us, what are you working on now? With so many works behind you, what are you looking forward to?
I'm working on a sequel to A Tale of Two Castles, which is a mystery with a dragon detective, and the main character is its assistant, Elodie.
Ah, okay.
That's what I'm working on, and on March 13th, I have a book of mean poems for kids coming out.
That's awesome.
Mean poems for kids.
Yeah, false apology poems. And Brian, I think that it might fall inside your kids' attention span.
Excellent. Well, I'll be sure to include it in my lesson plans.
In your syllabi.
That's right.
Forgive me, I meant to do it. They're all based on William Carlos Williams's poem, This Is Just to Say.
Okay.
Excellent. Yeah.
And when's that due out?
March 13th.
Actually, by the time this episode airs, it's going to be out and available on stores. So we'll make sure we include a link to that in the show notes.
Great.
So folks can go out and check that out. Excellent. So Tale of Two Castles, or the sequel to Tale of Two Castles. Now, that was inspired, the original book was inspired by The Mystery of Puss in Boots. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, readers of Puss in Boots probably don't know there's a mystery, but it seemed to me in rereading it that the cat goes into the castle and comes out alone. The ogre is gone. The cat tells a story about what happened, but there were no witnesses. So it occurred to me that maybe there something else happened. And that was where that was my taking off point, although none of that is in there.
Okay. Well, now, is this your first formal sequel to one of your books?
No, not probably not, because the three Disney books
true.
In the same world, and the second book needs the first. The third book stands on its own, but the second book doesn't really.
Okay.
So it's my second true series. And it's still not a series in the way Harry Potter is.
No.
That has a complete story arc from the beginning of the series to the end. This is one mystery and the next is another mystery. But it's the same characters and they are evolving.
What inspired you to revisit that setting and those characters?
Well, I love the characters, so I wanted to see if I could do more with them.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to seeing exactly what that is. And that is in process now?
Oh, yeah. It's been in process. And I think I've got to finish it this year or I'll be really unhappy.
And nobody wants Gail unhappy.
That's right.
Gail, is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
Yeah, I'd like to tell them about my website and my blog.
Please do.
My website is GailCarsonLevine.com, and that's about me, my books. And my blog is GailCarsonLevine.blogspot.com, and it is a blog about writing. So your audience might particularly like to check it out.
Absolutely. We'll include that link in the show notes.
Thanks.
And definitely make sure that that our writers have access to it. Thank you, Gail.
Sure.
All right. Well, why don't we take a break for a bit of promotion of other works and podcasts out there. When we get back, we'll introduce our guest writer, have her present her story idea, and we'll get down to the meat and potatoes of the roundtable. The nitty-gritty, yes. So, folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Christoph Laputka, author and creator of the Leviathan Chronicles. Do you want to learn how to make your own audio drama?
The best thing about the whole process is that nobody appreciates it but us.
You're not singing and you're not in a band, then you should not be using a mic that's too good because it picks
up everything, right?
Everything, yeah. Right. You know.
Do you want to learn more about directing voice actors?
For me, it is a performance, and I appreciate it when somebody else delivers a performance and recognizes that this is some kind of art form and not just something that we're doing as a little community to get stories out there.
Do you want to take your podcast to the next level?
Well, this is supposed to be a superior way to do it. It's just that if you're using the kind of free software that's available for a PC, you probably haven't done this before because it's not really convenient to do.
Something. Mm-hmm.
but most people don't realize that you release under a non-com no derivatives license. That doesn't mean that you can't then take what you did and go not just publish a book, but adapt it for the screen.
Hmm.
Or sell the podcast that you've recorded to the BBC for broadcast in another country.
Mm-hmm.
Then you need to tune in to the Full Cast podcast with Brian Lincoln and Abigail Hilton. The best place to get information on the production and assembly of great podcasts and great audio drama.
I mean, talking to you guys, everyone I talk to, I feel like I've learned something from. Everyone's got their strengths and backgrounds. Different people have a background in music or in film, or, you know, I'm in science, so maybe I would be the kind of person that might try to actually design some sort of a noise reduction filter from raw code. Not that I have, but...
Tune in to the Full Cast podcast.
Our website is fullcastpodcast.com.
And we're back, and with us on the Skype line today is Jackie Turner. Jackie, thank you for joining us on the Roundtable Podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yes. Now, Jackie, you have a book out there already, correct?
I do. It's a young adult fiction called The Cage, and it's the first in a series called the Birthright series.
Excellent. And is that out on Kindle, Smashwords?
Yes, it's also Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Awesome. We will make sure we include links to that in the show notes.
Thank you.
So, Jackie, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, how you came to writing.
I will. First, I just have to tell Gail, I am so excited to be here with you. About 2 months ago, I started listening to your books in my car. The first one I listened to was Ferris. And I had to, you know, start taking, more road trips because I couldn't not finish the book. It was so good.
Your monthly gas budget went up because you were driving everywhere.
I know. And it was ridiculous. And then I went on Twitter and I said, Gail Carson Levine is a genius. She's my new hero. And it's on my bucket list to meet her someday. So you are fulfilling my bucket list.
Oh, great.
I've been telling people that we're like the Make-A-Wish Foundation for writers.
That's right. Yeah. In addition to the literary gold, we are fulfilling dreams.
And fulfilling dreams. So Jackie, what do you do? How did you get into writing?
Well, I work with college students. I'm a licensed therapist, but right now I'm more of a consultant with a large organization that works with college students. But my whole life, off and on, I have loved storytelling. And I have a theater degree, one of my degrees. And so, theater takes a lot of time. I don't have that kind of time. But I thought I should try my hand at more writing. And about 3 years ago, I started writing on Tuesdays. I thought that was doable.
Tuesday's a good day to write.
Yeah, Tuesday's a better day than we used to think. And after a year, I had The Cage written. I was pretty surprised. And I just kept going. I love it. It's so fun.
Outstanding. And you know, it occurs to me now, Brian, that we have four people on the Skype line today, all of us having theater backgrounds.
Theater degree, right.
You know, I think there's a hidden path to writing glory found through the theater.
Right. Well, that's as a, you know, my degree was in theater directing, and so I always felt that writing was a good way to make actors do exactly what you want them to do.
Your control issues flaring.
Exactly. Yes.
Awesome. I'm going to do a blog post about that. I think that's worth pursuing.
Yeah.
Okay. So Jackie, let's go into the next stage, which is your story presentation. Go ahead and outline the story for us. Tell us about the plot, the genre, the theme, the characters, villains and heroes, key plot points, and so on and so forth. And I also understand that you have a few paragraphs from the first chapter of this book that you've already started writing. Is that correct?
That's right.
Awesome. Then once you wrap up your story presentation, go ahead and regale us with those few paragraphs.
All right.
The mic is yours.
Thank you. I actually just woke up with this idea one day. I guess it came to me in a dream. And it was this idea of three 70s high school girls coming back to school from their lunch break to find out that it was 35 years in the future. And they had no sense that they had been gone. So, you know, from feathered hair and disco balls to Hummers and zero tolerance, right? The girls have to try to figure out life. And, you know, I was reading this to one of my classes, because I also take writing classes whenever I can. They said, oh, it's sci-fi. And I said, well, maybe not, because I don't really care where they were for 35 years. What I care about is the culture shock they have to face and the relationships and negotiating this idea of being completely shaken. So that's sort of what came to me. I'm calling it, you know, right now, I'm calling it flash forward, but that might change.
You might run into some copyright issues.
Yeah, exactly. But that's sort of the idea, that suddenly they're in the future. And it's a modern day, takes place in the East Bay of California in a high school setting. The protagonist's name is Kelly. She's a tall, redheaded gal with good leadership skills, but she's also gullible and shallow at this point. She's sort of been getting through high school on her looks and her charm with a flippant 70s attitude. But now she has to contend with high school proficiency exams and, you know, changed attitudes about women and what they can do with their lives. So her growth edge is going to be going from a girl who sort of lets life happen to her to becoming a girl who's forced to take charge of her own life in order to survive. And she has some friends that are with her, Carrie and Sharon, her two best friends, and eventually I'm thinking a love interest, possibly named Harrison. The primary antagonist, I'm thinking Dr. Zan, who works for the Government Research Institute and wants the girls locked up so he can study them. He's sort of a middle-aged, mediocre scientist who sees this as his chance to write a better ending to his own story if he can figure out what happened to these girls. And the government won't let him keep them for more than a week, but he's desperate. So at some point, he kidnaps Kelly for further testing. Dave, you said I'm a pantser when we were on the phone earlier. And I think that's really true. But for this exercise, I did try to write a little plot summary. So in Act 1, I see the girls coming to the realization that they've lost 35 years. They deal with this loss. They have to deal with the fact that their parents have aged 35 years, in some cases have passed away in those 35 years, so they have to deal with that. And the first part of the book, and with the government sort of inspecting scrutiny and suspicion of the government. And then in Act 2, I have Carrie moving away because her parents have died and she has to go live with relatives. Sharon's family moved away, so she's gone. And now Kelly is left to deal by herself with all these cultural changes. And I kind of see the second act as humorous because I was just sort of brainstorming some of the differences. I was thinking about, you know, the 60s, 70s was free love versus the just say no sort of culture that we have now. Pot smoking every day versus the zero tolerance for drugs in the schools. You know, Gerald Ford as president versus Obama. The first microwave ever seen versus, you know, smartphones, fashion, music, slang, everything has changed so much. So I'm thinking the second half will explore the cultural differences. And then the third act, when Dr. Zahn captures Kelly and Harrison has to try to find her. But of course, she's a modern girl now, so she has to rescue herself. That's sort of where I'm going with it. And that's about as much as I have.
Okay.
And I'll read you a little segment. The first chapter is all I have written. And the girls are coming back from their lunch. The first thing they notice is the differences in the cars. You know, they're seeing Hummers, Minis, Mini Coopers, you know, things, smart cars, things they can't even identify as cars. And they realize that something drastic has changed. And in fact, Carrie's love truck is now gone from the parking lot. So as they're walking back to their drama class with their teacher, Mr. DeRue, that's where I'm picking up this reading. Kelly grabbed their arms tighter. Don't worry about it. Let's get to DeRue's class. Maybe he's on the joke. She started pulling them across the campus, which seemed to have changed in their lunch hour. Not only was there an absence of other students, but the buildings looked older, more run down. The trees were bigger, and some new ones had been planted. The girls walked quickly, their breathing rapid. Stop, a stern voice yelled from behind them. They turned as one to see a tall, skinny man with a beak-like nose walking toward them. He was wearing a security guard uniform. What are you girls doing on this campus? Carrie and Sharon looked at Kelly, the natural leader of the group. We're going to class, she replied. The first bell just rang. That was a second bell, and if your student's here, then why are you dressed like that? Where are your uniforms? Uniforms? Asked Kelly. Since when have we had uniforms? Since 5 years ago, and don't get smart with me, little lady. Whose class are you supposed to be in anyway? We're in Mr. Drew's drama class right now. At this, the stern man laughed, short and harsh. Ha! Oh, you're asking for it. You three come with me to the office. He brushed past them, marching toward the square building to their right. That's it.
Excellent. Excellent. Good. Excellent presentation, Jackie. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gail, what are your first impressions of the story that Jackie's working on?
Well, it sounds very interesting. I have some questions. Do the three girls, in particular Kelly, does she have siblings?
She has an older brother and a younger sister.
Okay. So they're alive.
Yes.
Another thing she has to deal with, right?
Right, right. Family changes.
And Sharon is gone, too. Carrie and Sharon both move.
Right.
And Harrison is from the present time.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. And have you spent time in a high school these days?
Well, yesterday I was at one speaking about my book. That was really fun.
Uh-huh. What I mean is, are you comfortable feeling that you know about what's going on in high schools today?
Well, mostly I work with college students, so I feel like I would need to go and do more research, yes.
Uh-huh. I was just wondering. I mean, I thought the pot versus zero tolerance, I was thinking, well, there may be zero tolerance, but I suspect there's a lot of pot.
Yeah, that's true.
So I was thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Those were basically my... And do you know why this time shift happened?
No, I don't. I haven't yet figured that out.
But you do plan to know that?
Yeah, I think I will.
Okay, I kind of think you need to know... I don't think you need to know it now.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of think that that's something you need to understand so the reader can understand it.
Yeah, that's good.
Sure, sure. And there are ample examples of mystical or fantastical or science fiction events occurring, and not a lot of attention is paid to them, but there needs to be some lip service, some understanding of why this occurred. It's such a calamitous and unnatural event that there needs to be at least a paragraph or two somewhere about that. And, you know, who knows? The reason for it might actually hinge upon Kelly and her friends and be very germane to the story that you want to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that one of the questions that maybe will need to be answered is if they do figure out at least a little bit about how they got to this point, is there any hope of them getting back? And do they want to get back?
Ooh, good question.
By the end.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's a really good question.
Yeah, that's good character motivation.
Right, know? Right.
And discovery.
Yeah. Another question that I have is if the two girls disappear by the beginning of Act 2, are they necessary in Act 1? And do they ever show up again? Do they come back? Because when you first started talking about how, you know, Carrie or was it Carrie and Sharon, I believe, how Carrie or Sharon loses some of their family. I think it was Carrie loses her family members and then has to go live with other family. That was a massive conflict to me that would be fascinating to explore. And then within that, how that changes her relationship with Kelly. And then to just remove them in Act 2, I think, is kind of trying to get away from that conflict as opposed to using it to really kind of drive some of the decisions that they make.
Good point. I was planning to follow their stories in book 2 and 3. But
okay.
I'm hoping to keep them involved with each other. For instance, you know, through modern technology, they can stay connected. And then
right.
Sharon, I don't think, would move so far away that they couldn't get together occasionally.
Yeah.
Well, let me nerd out on you for just a little bit, Jackie.
All right.
That's really easy for him to do.
Because that's where I live. And actually, before I start nerding, we do need to give our customary disclaimer that, Jackie, anything that comes out of my mouth or Brian's mouth or, dare I say, even Gail's mouth might be complete twaddle.
And total. Yes.
Complete and total twaddle. There are as many different ways to write as there are writers. And ideas are infinite. So this is, we don't present ourselves as authorities by any stretch of the imagination. We're just kicking around ideas, okay?
Okay.
All right. So, Brian, actually, I was able to scratch off my question of why do the friends need to be in the story if they disappear? The fact that you're going to introduce them later on in other stories, that's kind of cool because they could be having their own adventures.
Right.
But what if, and here's the sovereign what if, you know, the goal, you know, Kelly has, it's all about, I've got to get back home, this is crazy. And the only way that she can get home is that if the people that came through the time slip in the first place are all gathered together again.
Ooh.
You know, maybe Harrison is a young physicist, geek, quantum physics guy, and he's already doing research on this, and so he's naturally drawn to these girls in particular. And, you know, there's you can drop a few info dumps of it could be this, it could be that, blah, blah, blah. But if you then make it necessary that all the friends gather together again, then in that rescue of Kelly in the third act, you know, Harrison can bring in the cavalry and the girls come in, and the girls look different because and act different because they've had their own adventures. And the question of how did they become, you know, maybe one of them's a kick butt ninja girl, or, you know, I'm just spewing at this point. But the fact that the marks of their own personal journeys are upon them raises a question in the reader, which will launch you very gracefully into your second and third books.
I like it.
I have another question. I mean, the concept, Jackie, is awesome. There is so many things, and Brian and I are nerds, so we're going to be thinking along those lines. And Gail, I wanted to ask you to weigh in on this as well. The girls disappear in the 70s, and then for them, you know, no time has passed, and suddenly, poof, they're in 2011 or 10 or whatever. What happened in those intervening years to the people that are important to them? And Gail, I was just curious about your opinion. Do you think that would be a relevant path of research for Jackie to spend some time on?
That's a really interesting question, because I'm wondering about Dr. Zan. And, you know, I want to emphasize how much I agree with Dave about not just adopting everything that we say, but because I was always taught, when hearing criticism, to just let it percolate. So I think these things should, you just maybe take an open mind about them.
Absolutely.
As you start writing. But when you said that, Dave, about the people from her past who've disappeared, I think that's a very important story element. And Dr. Zan, I have big questions about that being as interesting a direction to go in. And
okay.
Because he's outside, it seems like more of a kind of just something that you'd come across more readily
mm-hmm.
Than something that is in their lives. I could be all wrong. But if you're going to do this with Dr. Zan, I would say bring him in early in the story.
Yes.
So let's just appear in Act 3.
Yeah, maybe even have him there in the 70s.
Yes, 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 exactly.
Yeah.
The reason
he could be a classmate.
Yeah, well, and the reason that Zan is such a mediocre scientist is because when the
he's
kids
a science teacher?
No.
Oh, not. Did I say that out loud?
You did.
Uh-oh.
Use your inside your head voice, fool.
Sorry.
is that he was a young budding scientist back in the 70s, ready to make his mark upon the science community, and he learns that these girls just vanished. And he built his whole career around proving that the reason they vanished is because of a time-space distortional rift, whatever. And he's laughed out of every science journal and every symposium, and he becomes a laughing stock of the community, humiliated. And now the girls that were the author of his humiliation have returned.
Yeah. And but if you're going to do that, I think he has to have something to do with them already. I mean, it can't just be he hears that these girls disappeared and there was no, you know, because there are so many people who disappear that there are never any remains found or whatever, that there has to be something else, something unique about it. Or maybe there's some experiment that he's working on and it was a side effect of his experiment.
Yes, yes.
Or something that went wrong that he knows he's kind of responsible for as well. And then when they reappear, you know, he's already been, like Dave was saying, ridiculed and all of that. But also he's been dealing with so much internal conflict about being the source of it and not knowing whether or not he actually killed these girls that by that point he's so twisted and so, you know, so darkened by his own fantasies about what happened and his grief and his anger at himself and at society that then he can be your, you know, your archetypal villain.
Yeah, but but it also has the path to his redemption too. You know, the remorse
and
guilt. Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it might be complete twaddle. We're just saying.
Right.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
If I can jump in, and I know I don't want to take too much time away from Gale because that's kind of the whole reason that we're here, Gale and Jackie. But one question that I had, or not question, but thought that I had was that if you're having Harrison from the present and he comes to save her, there has been a lot of, at least what I've seen with a lot of my students, is that a lot of the guys, because of the direction that society has gone in the last 20 years or so, seem to have been a little bit, not necessarily emasculated, but maybe the opposite. They've been, there is not a lot of room for the male hero.
Mm.
And so, you know, he may not have that instinct, and maybe that will be his own personal journey, is, you know, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it. Okay, yeah, I can do it. Or maybe it's because you said that her journey is going from just sort of going with the flow and traveling along to having to really take responsibility for herself as a woman and become this independent, strong woman. Maybe she ends up having to be her own savior.
And that's a good opportunity to explore gender stereotypes between the 70s and now. That's great.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I have a question for Gale.
Yeah.
In your stories, your heroines just face an amazing amount of obstacles. I think that's what makes them so wonderful. They just keep, as soon as they pass one, there's another one right there. And I think that keeps the book moving forward, as Brian was talking about keeping your interest in the pace. Do you have any ideas of obstacles that Kelly could, you know, face to keep her moving forward?
Well, I think that a wonderful thing about the idea that you've laid out is that there are obstacles built right in, which is the best way to get obstacles. I mean, she's going to be constantly worrying about goofing because she's in it, you know, the culture has changed a lot. So she's going to say stupid things. and she's going to be constantly trying to figure out what's not a stupid thing to say. Mm-hmm. So that would be one right there.
See, that was obvious to you, but it wasn't to me, so thank you.
Yeah. I think it's those inherent things that are going to really work for you. I do think that it is key to know whether she want what her goal is. If she wants to get back, was there something that this escape is really good? Maybe she wants to guarantee she doesn't go back.
Ooh.
But, you know, whatever it is, she needs a goal. And that's a little bit of my worry about Dr. Zan, because he comes from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes her goal in Act 3 to get away from him. But before that, she needs something that she's struggling against.
Right.
And that, when you know what that is, that's going to suggest obstacles. What can you make make it very hard for her to succeed?
Yes.
Gail, I wanted to ask, you've done a lot of research. In fact, I think I read for Wish, you actually interviewed a lot of eighth graders to understand their mindset and their perspective on things. And your experience with your heroines and with the genre that you work in and the audience that you write to, can you give Jackie kind of an archetypal overview of the teen heroine in terms of what's important to them, what are common themes that are running through their lives that might give her some handles to grab onto when she's developing this?
I can't. I mean, I wrote The Wish in, 1998?
Ah.
So even earlier. And since then, I've been doing fantasy. I do spend time with kids. I teach in the summer. I volunteer at the local library, and I teach kids from age 10 to 18. So I do have an idea, and I read their writing. So I have an idea, but my discovery is the kids are kids. Mm-hmm. They're not all that different from the way I was as a kid. Maybe the way I was at 14 is what a 12-year-old is like today. So mm-hmm. there may be like this jump forward that kids have done. But most essentially, I find that I'm very comfortable with kids. So I don't know how much help that is. And you're working with kids all the time. So,
yeah.
You know, a college kid isn't that far away from a high school kid.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Although they did have a freshman in the class yesterday, and he looked like a baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, God. I think that's more of our perspective, Jackie, than...
Yeah. And you know, Jackie, I'll tell you from my experience, one of the things that I've noticed is... I totally agree with Gail that kids are kids. And, you know, teachers always talk about this because teachers were typically some of the good kids. And so we were within our own bubble and we thought of ourselves as, you know, oh, all of the kids were like us. And so there are teachers today that go, oh my God, these kids are so bad and that's not how we were. And well, yeah, no, those kids were there. You know, those bad kids were there. And no kid is really a bad kid, but they have stuff going on in their lives that, you know, nobody knows about.
Right.
But that might even be a big difference too, is not just the rules in the school, but the family dynamic. And there's a mm-hmm. huge shift right now culturally. And a lot of the kids have very different standard morality and values and their sense of manners. And, you know, so I think one of the big disconnects with teachers and kids is when teachers are trying to make kids adhere to their own moral code or their own concept of manners, you know, that like if a kid doesn't say please when they ask for something, oh, that's the end of the world. But that's not the world that these kids live in right now. And so if you bring somebody from the 70s, even though she might have been one of the kids that the teachers was complaining about then, she might be somebody that the teachers would love now. You know, I had a kid who every time that she left my classroom, she made a point to walk up to me and say thank you. And it blew me away. You know, she was the only kid in the last 5 years that I've been teaching that has done that. And immediately she's at the top of my list, you know, like regardless of the quality of her work or whatever. And so, you know, I don't know because I was born in 79, so I have no idea what high school kids were like in the 70s. But just that little tiny difference in terms of how she responds to teachers that back then might have seemed rude, and today she might be the good kid.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah, that's true.
Gail, I wanted to ask you, Jackie's story, and again, I can't tell you enough, Jackie, how much I'm enjoying just musing over the different avenues this thing can take. There are a lot of elements that are begging to be riffed on in your storyline. I mean, there's the whole, how are things different from 1970 to 2011? There's the whole, what happened for that 35 years, what hardship and what trials and anguish did the families go through to have their children disappear and never get closure on that? How did this happen in the first place in terms of the time rift, and how does that figure into Kelly and everyone's story arc? Gail, as you look at all of these pretty sparkly baubles sitting before Jackie on her writing desk, how would you advise her to pursue the writing of notes or the exploration of these different themes to get her on the right track to fleshing out the story?
Well, those are really interesting questions that you just asked. And Jackie, if I were you, I would replay this and write those down.
But
I find when I'm taking notes that as I'm writing possibilities, the possibilities that generate more notes, more thought, are the ones I want to pursue. So I think that may be a guide for you. So when you look at Dave's questions and all of the questions that have been raised, the ones that get your juices going, that's what's going to be the most fertile territory.
Okay.
That's gold right there, Jackie.
Yep.
I couldn't agree more.
Sage advice.
Because really, it's I mean, all of them are bright and sparkly and you know, crave attention. And only you know what this story is about, Jackie, and you're still discovering that.
Yeah.
So what I like about Gail's perspective on this is that it invites research, and not, you know, Google and Wikipedia, but sitting down and drafting backstory, figuring out what are the glaring differences from the 70s to modern days, both physically and culturally, and gender-wise, because this is, I assume this is a YA book?
Yeah.
So you're going to be dealing with gender issues, relationship issues, concern about your place in the world, and are you worthy to take that place? Mm. You know, understanding, how did Kelly become gullible and shallow? What factors in her life, you know, whether it's 70s culture, or maybe it was her parents, or her relationship with her siblings. What made her that you know, flaky, not engaged in person? And what steps, and very specifically, what steps does she need to go through to become the person you want her to be at the end? This right. goes back to the what challenges can be placed in front of Kelly. Now, your character arc is a good place to look for that.
Right.
You know, the what you're talking about is a very dramatic change, and that's awesome. The more dramatic, the better. Everybody needs an arc that has that kind of range and challenge. So what are the steps that turn a shallow, gullible person into a take charge, got a handle on my life, and I'm putting the pedal to the metal type of person. You know, what anguish, what heartache, what triumph, what experience could layer and transform a person so dramatically?
Yeah, and to take this a step further, I might even suggest that because there are so many different ways that you can go with this, and there's so many avenues to explore that are fascinating to, you know, to readers or to you as the writer, since you're interested in turning this into a multi-book, you know, series following the other two characters, parse it out a little bit, you know, and know what the other characters' goals are just as definitively as you work out what Kelly's goal is. And then you can kind of say, okay, so maybe I have a character that when she shows up in 2011 or whatever year it is, she's still wearing her 70s clothes and may end up sparking a fashion revolution within her high school. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But she maybe that's not look any different at all.
Right, yeah, she might not, because they might already be doing the retro thing. And so then, you know, that maybe that belongs to Kelly, but maybe something else is going to belong to sure. Carrie or to Sharon. And then you're not faced with, I want to get all of this in right now with this one character, because it might better fit one of the others, especially if they've gone through, you know, they come back, but their family is gone. And so they're going to face, you know, some of these other things, and maybe that might fit them better. And then that can kind of help you streamline a little bit.
You know, I'm just thinking about obstacles for Kelly. She doesn't have a place to live, does she? She doesn't have money, right?
Well, her parents are still alive.
Her parents are still alive. Ah, yeah. And they're in town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which is an obstacle in and of itself.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does, you know, that's another possible exercise and note process. What does that reunion look like?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good 8 or 9 chapters in itself.
Yeah, because they're going to be way old compared to when she left, right?
Well,
right.
And you know, you can go the conventional tearful reunion. Oh, darling. But you know, what if her parents are divorced?
Having dealt with the loss of her and have given up on ever finding her, already accepted the idea that she's dead. And then here she is. It's almost a cruel, you know?
Yeah.
There's just a lot of things you could do with that.
And you can, you know, depending on how dark you want to take this, you know, the father could become an alcoholic is the reason why that, or some other, you know, fall from grace that, you know, sparked this event. And Kelly being, you know, a loving, fairly decent person is probably going to feel responsible for that.
Mm.
And the weight of 35 years of grief and sorrow and loss, how does somebody deal with that?
Right. And with, you know, a lot of my kids are dealing with similar issues right now anyway, and they always take it on themselves. It's always, well, it's because of me. It's my fault. It's something that I'm doing. And so talk about relatable.
Yeah.
You know, on so many different levels, but still, if you find a way to keep it, you know, because we're already turning this into a drama, and I think it sounded like
dark.
You originally, you wanted it to be comedic, but I think that some of the best comedy, you know, Robin Williams said that if you want to make somebody cry, you have to make them laugh first.
Mm.
Yeah. And, you know,
Steven Spielberg,
the best comedies.
Steven Spielberg in Jaws was saying, if you watch Jaws, the moment before the shark appears every time, there's a comedy bit of some kind, because laughter drops the barriers.
Exactly.
And then you can nail them. You don't have to deal with all of that rationalization stuff. You go right for the heart.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm thinking about some of the details, though. I love that that the kids are now wearing uniforms. And that's like a detailed surprise. And I'm thinking that, like, if Kelly's parents have moved, so she goes back to her house, they're not there, how does she find them? There are no telephone books anymore. There are no...
Good point.
There are no payphones. This, you know, it's all those little details that are going to make trouble for her constantly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everything is in the details. Do you know the book Bird by Bird?
Yes.
That's a great book. About
I love that book.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys know that.
My mom gave that to me about 10 years ago. It's an excellent writer's text. Absolutely.
And it's all that about the detail. I wonder along those lines if we could talk a little bit about the part that you read. Because I like the writing.
Yeah.
The question that I have is about that security guard. And I had some doubts about his dialogue. I felt that you might want to think about who he is a little bit. Because he like takes an automatic kind of belligerent stance to these kids. And maybe there are some other choices that you might want to make about that. And like I was thinking, okay, he's taking them to the office. What's going through his head? Does he know who's in the office? Is he going to bring them to the assistant principal? Is he going to bring them to the guidance counselor? Is he going to bring them to the principal? What are those people like? Does he want to set up a miserable experience for them? Does he want to be a little bit kind to them? What's going on with... I know he's not going to be an important character, mm-hmm. but it might be worth thinking about who he is and what his take on these kids is, because they look a little weird. But is he like a miserable human being who's just going to hate kids, or is he going to be something else? So I think that might be a way in that little piece to make it more interesting. Mm-hmm. And think about the choices that he needs to make in this situation.
And also, whatever your first thought is about that background, go 180 on it just for chucks. Seriously, I always tell people that ask me, trust your instincts, but don't rely on them.
Right. And I think Gail makes an excellent point, because this is, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first character that they really come into contact with.
Yeah.
That challenges them on anything. And so you're also going to want the girl's perception of who this person is. And if he hasn't really been fleshed out in that sense, then we won't get those nuances, And he'll probably have a walkie-talkie.
Or a cell phone.
Or a cell phone.
And he'll call it in on his way in. So there's a, holy crap, what is that moment?
Yeah. And sometimes, I'm just thinking of the security guards at my school. They, immediately would probably call into the office with the names of the girls to see if they're on any roster. Mm-hmm. And if they're not, then it's, you are not allowed on this campus. And that could pose, a difficulty as well, because the security guards on my campus would not hesitate to call the police if somebody's like, no, I'm supposed to be here, and they're not a student. So I don't know.
Okay.
Those are definitely things to flesh out.
What if this security guard is a failed writer? He wants to be a writer so bad and he loves mysteries. What if his son is Harrison?
Ooh.
And what if the fact that these girls showing up in their 70s glam rock look show up, he checks in, they're not on the roster, and he kicks them out, and that sticks in his head. And so he starts researching, and Harrison comes in, what are you doing? It's like, I'm checking out these girls, blah, blah, blah. He's Googling or whatever. I don't know if you'd want to do a detour into a separate POV for this. I don't know. Right. But just that kind of weaving in of motivation and character always appeals to me when I read a book.
Yeah, and for something like this, go ahead. You go ahead, Gail.
Well, I was just thinking, depending on how old everybody is, they were maybe 15, 16. They're maybe 15, 16. So 35 years ago, they were maybe 15, 16. So if this security guard is 50, he might have been a classmate.
Oh.
If he's younger years, they're in a way older than he is. It's so...
That's awesome.
I love that. Yeah.
That's, I love that.
And there are always people that just cannot shuck the old high school and will do anything they can to stay in its halls.
And it could even be some boy that... I don't want to make them cruel and say that they picked on him, but
oh,
you could.
Yeah, because if these are the if these are the in crowd, these are the glam chicks of the high school. You know, cruelty is the coin of the realm. Right. Along those lines. Again, we might be traipsing along darker paths than Jackie wants to go. Again, or, that's...
I end up killing all of my characters. So, you know, don't listen to anything that I say.
Very Shakespearean.
Yeah.
I was thinking, or if you go 180, he was the high school president, you know, of the class. And now he's
there you go.
And now he's a security guard. Oh,
right.
Yes!
Right.
What a great... yeah, and says points out, you know, just because you're the prom queen or the class president doesn't mean that your life is perfect. From that point out, oh, that's beautiful. See, this is great stuff.
It is.
He's bald.
Yeah. And he's bald. Yes. I'm looking at the clock on the wall, and guys, we could just keep doing this forever. But I know Gail has things to do, and Jackie, I wanted to ask you when we hang up from this call. What are you going to do next?
Well, I think I'll sit and think about this for a while. It's been really wonderful for making my mind just go crazy.
Mission accomplished.
Yes.
Good, good.
I'm wondering, are there any questions you'd like to ask?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask Gail if you wrote Lemony Snicket, because that's what the librarian told me, but...
No, that's Daniel Handler. No, not me.
There's a misinformed librarian.
I know. Really? That's amazing. Gosh, no, thank you. I just feel very overwhelmed, and I have so many wonderful ideas now. I feel like I'm ripe for some fun writing ahead.
Excellent.
Outstanding. Gail, any last words of wisdom or guidance for Jackie?
Well, when you get into the writing, I mean, I guess one of the things that we've sort of gotten to a little bit, I find that things get more compelling when I slow down as a writer and get into all those details. Mm-hmm. So that's to keep in mind. Okay. And I guess that's about it.
Okay, well then, Jackie, we always exact a vow from everybody on the show that when this story gets completed and ends up on Kindle, rises meteorically to the top and launches your career as a brilliant YA author, that you will let us know so we can put your name up on the success stories page that we're going to build. Do you solemnly swear this?
I do.
And we've got it on tape. Awesome.
Oh, most definitely.
All right. Well, Jackie, thank you for taking a bold step out of your comfort zone and coming to share your story with us. Brian, I had a blast with this conversation.
I did too. This was fabulous.
Outstanding. And Gail, your time is valuable, I know, and we're so deeply grateful that you made the time for us and then shared so generously of your experience and your insight. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right, folks, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Roundtable Podcast. As always, thanks for tuning in. Everybody's got a story. You guys got to get out there and write yours. And if you're having trouble, hey, look us up. That's what we're here for. Until next time, take care. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Go right. Bye-bye.
Yes, go right. Thank you, Brian.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBruyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is at writerspodcast, or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.